103, the best of I'm Speaking Plainly with Bill Hay in 30 minutes.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
What do these actors, actresses, TV hosts, and other personalities have in common? Montel Williams, Jamie Lynn Sigler, who played the daughter of a mobster in The Sopranos, Jack Osborne of the Osbournes, Ann Romney, wife of Mitt Romney, once Republican presidential candidate, the actress Terry Garr, and Walter Williams of the OJs. Well, what do they have in common? Well, they've all been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. In fact, country singer Clay Walker and Montel Williams have both been fundraisers to help conquer the disease. But what is multiple sclerosis, and why is it called by that name? First, what is sclerosis?
In medicine, sclerosis simply means stiffening of a structure, usually caused by a replacement of the normal organ-specific tissue with connective tissue.
Apart from multiple sclerosis, there are other diseases that share the term sclerosis in their name, such as amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, sometimes known as Lou Gehrig's disease, which, to this date, is a progressive, incurable, and usually fatal disease of motor neurons. Think Stephen Hawking.
Then there is atherosclerosis, where there is a deposit in the arteries of fatty materials, like cholesterol, which causes hardening.
There's also osteosclerosis, where the bone density is significantly increased, resulting in decreased lucency on x-rays. There are others as well, but today we're simply going to look at multiple sclerosis.
It is often called a demyelinating disease by researchers and physicians, but this does not help explain the disease if you don't know what myelin and demyelinization are in the first place.
Most nerves in the human body are covered by a sheath or wrapping, which is called myelin. If this sheath is damaged, then there's impairment of signals that travel in the affected nerves.
Myelin is a fatty substance formed by what are called glial cells in both the central and peripheral nervous system.
Think of myelin as insulation, but really it's way more than that. It helps increase the speed at which information is passed within the nerve cell from one nerve cell body to another, from a nerve cell body to a muscle.
If you look at it under a microscope, it looks, at least to me, as small footballs of fat, one after the other, wrap around the long legs of the nerves.
So what does it do for the cell?
Well, myelin speeds the transmission of electrical impulses along the nerve cell, helping electrical impulses get to where they are going faster.
Take walking, for example. We depend on nerves to tell the brain what muscles tighten and flex in order to allow us to walk or run. Now, if these signals are delayed, then walking could become difficult, if not impossible. We might just trip all the time if the signal is too slow or erratic. But that's not the only effect of slowed nerve transmissions.
The reduction in conduction ability causes deficiency in sensation, movement, cognition, or other functions depending on which nerves are involved.
When demyelinating occurs, then the myelin sheath is damaged or disrupted, and that slows transmission of the nerve signals. Some of these demyelinating diseases are caused by genetics. Some are due to infections, while others by autoimmune reactions. There are other factors as well. There is a class of chemicals which are the active ingredients in commercial insecticides, such as sheep dip and weed killers, as well as flea treatment preparations for pets, which also can cause damage and demyelinate the nerves. Neuroleptics can also cause demyelination. Never heard of these? Huh? Perhaps you know them better as antipsychotic medicines or major tranquilizers. These include medicines such as some of those used to treat schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorders, and even bipolar disorder.
Before we get to our main topic, multiple sclerosis, let us tell you just some of the signs and symptoms of the demyelinating diseases.
Some of the symptoms and signs that can present in people with a demyelinating disease we've mentioned, such as problems walking in unsteady gait. But others include blurred vision, fatigue, clumsiness, and hand paralysis, ocular or eye paralysis, or cranial nerve palsies, impaired muscle coordination, muscle weakness, even loss of sensation and impaired vision, neurological symptoms, incontinence, as well as hearing and speech problems can be present.
With multiple sclerosis, there is good evidence that the body's own immune system is at least partially responsible. Acquired immune system cells called T cells are known to be present at the site of lesions.
Other immune system cells called macrophages also contribute to the damage. Now let's not forget that vitamin B12 deficiency can cause demyelination. In the rest of the show, we're going to try to call multiple sclerosis by its nickname, just MS.
MS takes several forms. In one form called the relapsing form, no symptoms occur in isolated attacks. In the progressive form, the symptoms build up over time.
Between attacks, symptoms could disappear completely, but often permanent neurological problems remain. The true cause, it's still uncertain.
But what we do know is that the underlying mechanism is either destruction by the immune system or failure of the myelin-producing cells.
Proposed causes for this include genetics and environmental factors, such as being triggered by a viral infection. There is no known cure for multiple sclerosis, but treatment attempts to improve function after an attack and present new attacks are common.
One of the major problems with using medications to treat the symptoms of MS are the fairly frequent side effects. These medications are often very poorly tolerated.
Physical therapy can sometimes help, and many MS patients pursue alternative treatments despite a lack of evidence of benefits. Unfortunately, the life expectancy is, on average, 5 to 10 years lower than that of an uninfected person.
Multiple sclerosis happens to be the most common immune-mediated disorder, affecting the central nervous system.
The latest statistics in 2015 indicate that as many as 2.3 million people were affected worldwide. Now, in that same year, about 18,900 people died from MS. This was up from about 12,000 in 1990. That's about a 30% increase in just 25 years.
The disease usually begins between the ages of 20 and 50, and it is twice as common in women as in men.
Again, the multiple sclerosis refers to the numerous plaques or lesions that develop on the white matter of the brain and the spinal cord. But there is hope. A number of new treatments and diagnostic methods are under development.
There have been a lot of attempting links as far as who is more prone to get the disease. For example, let's take geography.
MS is more common in people who live farther from the equator, although exceptions do exist. MS is more common in regions with northern European populations.
Decreased sunlight exposure resulting in decreased vitamin D production, and as we said earlier, has also been put forward as an explanation.
A relationship between season of birth and MS lends support to this idea. With fewer people born in the northern hemisphere in November as compared to May being affected later in life. Environmental factors, they can play a role during childhood, with several studies finding that people who move to a different region of the world before the age of 15 acquire the new region's risk to MS. If migration takes place after age 15, however, the person retains the risk of their home country.
Many microbes have been proposed as triggers of MS, but none have been confirmed. A relationship between MS and the consumption of pork has also been reported.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky with my co-host Carmen Lasky. We've been talking about multiple sclerosis and some of its causes.
There's a hygiene hypothesis, and that proposes that exposure to certain infectious agents early in life are actually protective.
The prevalence hypothesis proposes that the disease is due to an infectious agent more common in regions where the MS is common and wherein most individuals it causes an ongoing infection without symptoms. There is also evidence for a virus as a cause.
Individuals having never been infected by the Epstein-Barr virus are at a reduced risk of getting MS, whereas those infected as young adults are at a greater risk than those having had it at a younger age.
Other diseases that may be related include measles, mumps, and rubella. Smoking has been shown to be an independent risk factor for MS, and stress may be a risk factor as well.
I have to mention that vaccinations were studied as causal factors. However, most studies simply showed no association. Several other possible risk factors, such as diet and hormone intake, have been looked at. However, evidence of their relation with the disease is poor.
We have already mentioned demyelination as a big part of the disease, but we did not mention inflammation.
The inflammatory process is caused by T cells, which are a type of white blood cell that plays an important role in the body's defenses. To get into the brain, there has to be some kind of physical disruption of what is called the blood-brain barrier, and that allows T cells to gain entrance into the brain.
The T cells recognize myelin as not as normal tissue, but as foreign body and attack it. This attack on myelin starts the inflammatory processes, which triggers other immune cells and the release of certain chemicals, including antibodies.
More breakdown of the blood-brain barrier in turn causes a number of other damaging effects, such as swelling, activation of macrophages, and more activation of cytokines and other destructive proteins. So what's so bad about inflammation here?
Well, inflammation can potentially reduce transmission of information between neurons in at least three ways. The soluble factors released might stop neurotransmission by intact neurons. These factors could lead to or enhance the loss of myelin, or they may cause the axon to break down completely.
I mentioned the blood-brain barrier. For those of you who are new to the term, Carmen is going to explain it a bit more for us.
The blood-brain barrier is a part of the capillary system that prevents the entry of T cells into the central nervous system. It may become permeable to these T cells due to an infection by a virus or even a bacteria. After it repairs itself, typically once the infection has cleared, T cells may remain trapped inside the brain.
The blood-brain barrier system allows the passage of water, gases, and fat-soluble molecules to diffuse across the barrier by what is called passive diffusion. A really crude example would be a pot of cooked rice. You pour the water-rice mixture through a sieve. The larger rice remains in the sieve, but the water passes through. You could think of this as passive diffusion.
There is also selective transport of molecules such as glucose or sugar molecules, as well as amino acids that are absolutely necessary for nerves to function correctly.
Specialized structures in a selective transport system, they allow certain molecules to pass even if they do not pass passively. Think of a large hole in the sieve guarded by a battery-operated door, which allows only small rice kernels to get through. Thus, we have a selective system of diffusion.
This is the blood-brain barrier, which restricts the diffusion of solutes in the blood, such as bacteria, from getting into the cerebral spinal fluid.
But if there is an anomaly of the system, for whatever reason, then these organisms or chemicals that ordinarily don't get through would pass from the blood right into the brain.
In the case of human cells, unlike our imaginary sieve, there are certain transport proteins that help with the active transport of metabolic products such as glucose across the barrier.
Multiple sclerosis is typically diagnosed based on the presenting signs and symptoms. We also help confirm the diagnosis with supporting medical imaging and laboratory testing. But it can still be difficult to confirm, especially early on. Do you know why?
Well, it is simply because many of the symptoms and signs are so similar to those of other medical problems.
Let's take a moment to talk about something called the McDonald criteria. No, it's not named after Ronald McDonald, but after the famed neurologist W. Ian McDonald, who directed an international panel in association with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society and recommended revised diagnostic criteria for MS in April 2001.
The McDonald criteria maintained a scheme for diagnosing MS based solely on clinical grounds, but also proposed for the first time that when clinical evidence is lacking, magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, findings can serve to diagnose MS.
Let's briefly look at these criteria. First of all, if there are two or more relapses of symptoms consistent with those of MS, there really no other clinical evidence will be necessary to diagnose MS.
If there are two or more attacks and one objective lesion, then a positive MRI or a positive cerebral spinal fluid test for MS would clinch the diagnosis.
With only one attack and one objective lesion noted, then you would need additional MRI or positive CSF and two or more MRI lesions consistent with MS to make the diagnosis.
Clinical data alone may be sufficient for a diagnosis of MS if an individual has had separate episodes of neurological symptoms, characteristics of the disease.
Now, we left out some other parts of the McDonald criteria. After all, we're not here to make you an expert in the field, just to explain what the present level of diagnosis is in the world. The McDonald criteria, which focuses on the clinical, laboratory, and radiologic evidence of lesions at different times and in different areas, is the most commonly used method of diagnosis. In those who seek medical attention after only one attack, other testing is needed for the diagnosis. As the criteria indicate, the most commonly used diagnostic tools are neuroimaging, analysis of cerebrospinal fluid, and MRI imaging in the brain and spine, which may show areas of demyelination. How do you test the cerebrospinal fluid? Well, you use a lumbar puncture to provide evidence of chronic inflammation in the central nervous system. Finally, we come to treatments, that is, treatment for the MS attacks. Then we have something called plasma exchange or plasmapheresis. Plasma, which happens to be the liquid part of your blood, is removed and separated from your blood cells. The blood cells are then mixed with a protein solution and put back into your body. For primary progressive MS, a drug called ocrelizumab, brand name Ocrevus, is the only FDA-approved disease-modifying therapy. It slows worsening of disability in people with this type of MS. For relapsing remitting MS, there are several disease-modifying therapies that are available. However, many of the disease-modifying therapies used to treat MS carry significant health risks. Selecting the right therapy is very important. Beta interferons are medications that are most commonly prescribed medications to treat MS. They are injected under the skin or into the muscle, and they can reduce the frequency and severity of relapses. Again, side effects come into play here. They include flu-like symptoms and injection site reactions. And you'll also need blood tests to monitor your liver enzymes, because liver damage is possible as a side effect of interferon use. Ocrevus, which we mentioned before, can also be used here. In fact, this medication is the only DMT approved by the FDA to treat both the relapsing remitting and primary progressive forms of MS. But what does it really do? Ocrevus is given via an IV infusion by a medical professional. Side effects could include infusion-related reactions, including irritation at the injection site, low blood pressure, fever, and nausea, among others. Ocrevus may also increase the risk of some types of cancer, particularly breast cancer. Side effects may include skin irritation at the injection site. Now, we also have dimethylfumarate, or Tecfidera, to help reduce relapses. There are side effects here as well. Other side effects include headache, high blood pressure, and blurred vision. Teriflunomide can cause liver damage, hair loss, and other side effects. It's harmful to developing fetuses and should not be used by women who may become pregnant and are not using appropriate contraception or their male partner. This immunosuppressant drug can be harmful to the heart and is associated with development of blood cancers, so it's used only in treating MS when it is most severe and is an advanced MS. Symptomatic relief, such as with muscle relaxants, can also be prescribed. On a lighter note, Carmen and I have decided to sing our rendition of an old song by Tom Lehrer called The Elements.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium. There's strontium, and silicon, silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. There's holmium, and helium, and hafnium, and erbium, and phosphorus, and francium, and fluorine, and terbium.
Since this song was first performed, a new element has been discovered called lawrencium. For those taking notes, write it down.
And manganese, and mercury, molybdenum, magnesium, dysprosium, and scandium, and cerium, and cesium, and lead, praseodymium, and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium, and calcium, and chromium, and curium, there's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium. And also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, krypton, neon, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium.
These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
If you or any of your family members have been prescribed any medication that are being rejected or denied at the pharmacy, and you feel that the medication is both appropriate and medically necessary, then you need to make your voice known. Contact your state and federal representatives and tell them what's happening. It is only with this that we can right the wrongs that are being perpetrated on a large part of our citizenry and their human rights when they are denied appropriate and necessary treatment.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com. Where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center. Have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.